Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to the Learn to Code with Me podcast. In this episode, you're going to find out how and why you can start contributing to open source projects, and even how you might be able to work on an open source project full time. That's all coming up in a moment. Wouldn't it be great if you could get paid to learn how to code? Even if you're a total beginner just starting out on your own Learn to Code journey? Well, I'm here to tell you that you can do this. My free ebook, 28 Ways to Earn a Side Income While Learning How to Code, walks you through 28 different side gigs you can do to turn your tech skills into dollars, even if you're just starting out. You can download it for free over at learntocodewith.me/sidegig today. Again, the URL is learntocodewith.me/sidegig. Hey, listeners. In today's episode, I talk with Safiya Abdallah. Safiya is an open source developer, a software engineer at Microsoft, a writer, and a co-host of the Book Bites podcast. The reason why I reached out for Safiya to come on the show is because she is both a contributor and a maintainer of open source projects. And for so many reasons that we're going to get into during this interview, contributing to open source is a great idea. So today we're going to cover what open source means, what makes for a beginner-friendly open source project, how to include your contributions to open source on your resume or related, and so much more. The tips Safiya shares are perfect for anyone curious about venturing into the world of open source. Enjoy. Hey, Safiya, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to chat with you today and to talk about open source. This isn't something we've covered a whole lot on the show, so I can't wait to get into it. But first, I would love if you can tell us a bit about your background and how you got into tech.
Sure. How I got into tech? Boy, that's a story that starts quite a while ago. I got into tech when I was a preteen, around 10 or 11 years old. There was a website at the time called Neopets.com, which me and my friends used to hang out on. And one of the things that you could do on Neopets was design a profile page for basically your social media profile on the platform. And they allowed you to use HTML and CSS to create your page. So as one of my hobbies and something that I did with my friends, we would kind of try to create the glitteriest, most fabulous profile pages that we could. And in doing that, I ended up having to learn HTML and CSS. And that was a really exciting moment for me, because that's kind of when I discovered that computers were not just things that you could use to do stuff, but things that you could make do stuff for you, like building a really cool profile page on Neopets or writing a program to do something. And since then, I've just kind of fallen in love with it. I was taught myself programming, did it all through high school, went to college, did computer science, and yeah, just was very enthusiastically into it from that first moment that I discovered that computers were these things that I can control.
Wow. So you've been working, or not working, I guess not in high school, but programming for quite a long time then, if you started when, well, you were like 10 or 12 years old.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really awesome. And how did you get, I don't know if this is the right way to phrase the question, but I would love if you could talk a bit about how you got into open source and what that means. So bear in mind, a lot of folks listening to this show are brand new to technology, and some maybe have only been learning about it for a few weeks. So sure. Yeah, if you could tell us a bit about it, that'd be great.
Yeah, so if you Google open source, the dictionary definition is some legalese about how open source software is software where the creator of the software gives you the right to modify it or copy it in some way, something to that effect. That is one definition of open source. For me, the definition of open source is any code that exists publicly that individuals can collaborate on. Oftentimes, people will host this code on platforms like github.com, where the code is stored in repositories and multiple software developers can come in and submit changes to the code that's in these repositories. Open up commentary about features or bug fixes that they would like, things like that. So for me, open source software is really any software that people build together in a public fashion.
And how long has this been like around for? Like if that's like the right word to phrase it. I'm sure people have been collaborating on different kinds of software for ages, but what, like, I don't know, like, when did it become more popular or more common, I guess?
Yeah, so open source software has been around since forever. You have pieces of open source software from the 60s and 70s. I would say more recently it's gotten popular with the advent of tools like GitHub.com, which is often described as a social coding platform. I think this was a really monumental technology because it gave people a place to share their code and to collaborate on it in one centralized location. So I think the advent of those kinds of technologies was really helpful. And I think in general, just the emergence of the web and the internet as more accessible technologies for some people kind of brought about the advent of open source, because now you had a way to communicate and interact with people who, you know, didn't just work at the same company as you or study in the same computer science department at a university. Maybe you were a programmer at one university collaborating with a software engineer at a different company. And the internet kind of opened up these opportunities where people didn't have to be in the same space in order to have technical conversations and to build software together. So I think it was the internet is what did it. And of course, the internet made a lot of important things happen in technology. So I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. And I would love to hear, like, how did you discover open source and what made you want to start participating in it?
Yeah. So for me, it started off as a personal challenge. When I was a freshman in college, I had gone to a workshop series called Write Speak Code. Write Speak Code is, I believe, a national organization here in the United States where different workshops will prop up in different cities. It's geared at primarily women in tech, and the idea is to help you build your brand as a software engineer by writing, blog posts, books, so on, speaking at conferences or meetups, and coding in open source. And so it was one of my kind of personal goals my freshman year of college, is I wanted to get involved in all of those things. So I had started writing blog posts. I had started speaking at meetups and some small local conferences. And then my last big goal was I had to contribute to open source. And so I still remember it, the day I did it. And I always like to tell this story because I think it really puts it into perspective for a lot of people who are beginners and just looking to get started in open source. The first time I made a change to an open source project, first time I submitted a pull request, it was a one-letter change. That was it. It was so trivial in so many ways now that I look back at it. But believe it or not, I sat on that one letter change for I think a week and a half, trying to figure out how I use Git and how I use GitHub and how I use all of these different technologies, how I make the change, how I test and verify it. And I was just so nervous the whole time and spending so much time on it. And then I submitted the pull request. The maintainer of the project, that's the person who's in charge of reviewing pull requests and issuing releases and things like that, reviewed it, said thank you, and they merged it, and it was done. And that was an extremely, again, when I talk about like empowering moments in my career, you know, the first one was the first time I made a theme for my Neopets profile page. I think another one was when I had my pull request merged into that open source project for the first time. And I was like, wow, I can do this. It's not that hard. You know, I just have to put in time and I can do it. And I've been doing open source ever since. It's been about, 5 years now. sometimes people will joke that I've spent a fourth of my life or more in open source. But yeah, that was kind of the catalyst for me, is I had this personal goal of contributing to open source that was tied into my kind of other goal of starting to build my brand as a software engineer. And then I just got hooked on it. So it's such a very, it was a satisfying experience. And it's always great to collaborate and work with people and form a network of other software engineers that I work really well with, that understand how I work, that, you know, if I have a really interesting idea, I can go to them and they'll hear me out and help me out with it. It's great to have that network.
Yeah, that is such a cool story. And I love how you told us how you, like, it was just a one letter change and you were sitting on it as if for a week. That's really great. And you mentioned you went to this conference or this event, Rightspeak Code, your freshman year mm-hmm. of college. And so then when was this? Like how much time had passed after that event?
Yeah. So I would say, I think I went to the event. Oh, gosh, I have to dig through my brain. I think I went to the event. It must have been the winter of my freshman year of college. And then I spent like the winter and the spring, you know, blogging, and I had found like a conference to speak at and some meetups to speak at. And then the summer, it was the summer after my freshman year of college, I was doing an internship in the Bay Area. And that's when I did the open source bit. So it must have been maybe, I think it's safe to say like 5 to 6 months after that conference is when I got around to submitting my first pull request in open source.
Wow. Okay. And you were studying computer science at your college. Okay. That's that. For some reason, I thought you said your senior year. So I think I misheard you earlier. So I thought it was 4 years later, but okay. That makes sense. But still, even if it was 4 years later, that would be a great story nonetheless. So yeah. Do you remember what project it was for?
Yeah, it was for a project in the Python ecosystem. It was called Pandas. It's essentially a data analytics tool. I was familiar with that project because I had used it during my part-time job during my freshman year of college. So I was already familiar with it as a user. And the other thing that was really appealing about that project is they did a really good job of labeling all of their issues in their GitHub. Their issues is essentially a list of bugs and features that they need to implement. And they had a really great labeling scheme where they could kind of label things by how easy or hard it was, how much time they expected it to take, and then what category it was in. So it was really easy for me to essentially find an easy bug that would not take me a long time to do and to fix it. And those are really great because they tend to be the kinds of things that are just small enough that the maintainer of the project might not have enough time to do something so small, but small enough that, you know, a new contributor or someone who's never been working in open source can tackle them. So that's how I chose the Pandas project as the first project that I submitted a PR to.
Nice. So I know, and I feel this way, and I know beginners feel this way, that contributing to an open source project, well, first of all, you have to like understand the entire, right? Like if you're using GitHub and know what all these different terms mean. And then once you're like up to speed with that, understand how it works. I feel like there's a lot of, I don't know, maybe imposter syndrome, like being nervous to, because what if you're wrong, right? Like what if you suggest something? What if you're wrong? What steps to take? All of that. How would you recommend to someone who's like somewhat new, like go about educating themselves and learning like how to contribute and like the proper steps to take?
Yeah. So I would say if you're interested in contributing to open source, one of the first things I would do, and it's a little bit counterintuitive, is find a project that has a good culture. And what I mean by that is find a project where the maintainers are going to be supportive and provide good mentorship, where the community is going to be tolerant if you make a mistake or mess something up. And kind of aim to work in that kind of a project. And I say this because the reality is we all don't know everything. Even now that I've been doing this for almost 5 years, I don't know everything about open source or GitHub or things, the technologies that I work with. So finding a place where it's okay for you to make mistakes and it's okay for you to learn is the first most important step. I would say that there are some projects that are not as tolerant of learners as others. So find the ones that are. I would like to shout out the project that I'm involved in, which is called Interact, as a good project to participate in if you are someone who is, you know, a learner and wants to get involved in open source and be a part of a community that's going to be welcoming and supportive. So A, find the right people to collaborate and work with. And then B, take it step by step. Don't take it all at once, I think, is the best piece of advice. I would say start by building a foundation, which is just knowing a particular programming language that that project uses. And then start by learning just Git, and then start by learning GitHub, and kind of assemble the pieces that you need to know bit by bit. I think this kind of creation of the roadmap for your learning is subjective and unique to each individual, which is why I really emphasize finding a good community and a good project to learn with as the first step, because those people are going to help guide your learning and show you the right way to do things and the right way to learn things based on their experiences and also their knowledge about your background and your experiences. So yeah, I actually think, you know, it's really hard to generalize and say what the best way to learn is, but I think a good piece of advice that I would give is find a project with people who can help teach you and are tolerant of the fact that you're a learner, like we all are.
And could you repeat the open source project that you, is the right word you maintain? Yeah, you maintain.
Yes. The right word is I maintain it with several other people, so it's not just a solo effort. The project is called Interact. The spelling for that is NTERACT. You can find us online. The website is going to be NTERACT.io. So if you go there, you can read a little bit about the project. You can find links to our GitHub organization, as well as a Slack channel where all of the contributors and maintainers of the project hang out.
So you just kind of answered the next question I was going to ask, but I would love to talk about it a bit more, because as you were speaking, I was thinking, okay, so like, do all of these people just communicate on GitHub? Like, is that like the main platform of communication? But sounds like you guys are also staying in touch over Slack, correct?
Yeah. So I would say there's a couple of different ways that people in open source communicate, and it also depends on the project. I can speak to how we do it on the Interact project. Communication does happen in GitHub. GitHub tends to be a great place for this because GitHub issues and pull requests will be indexed by Google. So if someone ends up Googling something that's kind of related to your project or an issue on your project, they will land on your GitHub page. So that kind of information is really easy to have surfaced publicly through a search engine like Google and to look back at later, because it's all kind of archived and stored on GitHub. So generally GitHub for kind of communications where you want to for communications where we want to preserve the information. And we also communicate via Slack, and this is kind of for more back and forth conversation where you're maybe getting some mentorship directly from someone or want to talk about an idea or a problem that you're running into. Sometimes we will jump on Hangouts, so video Hangouts with 2 to 3 people where we will kind of pair program or work on a problem. Another way we communicate is through discourse forums. So this is where it's essentially kind of like a modern forum where people can make posts and other individuals can respond to it. There's also weekly recorded video hangouts where we provide updates on what we're doing and what we're working on. And in Interact, we will post those to our YouTube channel so that folks who are interested in what's going on in the project can go to the YouTube channel, watch those weekly uploads, and kind of get a sense of what's going on. So there's a ton of different ways to communicate. We try and keep all of it digital. Oh, I will add, we also do have some in-person, we call them sprints, where maintainers and contributors who can will fly out to a single location for a week, and we will all be working on the project at that location physically together for a week. So yeah, there's a ton of variety in the way that people communicate in open source, from text-based to video to audio to in-person. It's kind of whatever is the most appropriate for what we're trying to do.
Sit tight, podcast listeners. We're taking a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Technical side gigs have had a massive impact on my life. Shortly after I began learning to code, back in 2013, I landed a gig as an assistant to a more experienced web developer. That gig was my first step towards working as a freelancer later on. Even Learn to Code with Me, which is now my full-time job, began as a side project. I am so obsessed with side gigs because they are the perfect way to build up your experience and confidence as you transition into tech. Even more, they enable you to try out different aspects of tech before committing to a new career path in any particular direction. I really recommend them. Because I love side gigs so much, I put together a free ebook to help you start your technical side gig journey so you can earn extra money every single month while advancing your skills. Inside this free guide, you'll learn which skills you need for these 28 different side gigs, how much money you can make from each, plus tips on how to get started on whichever idea is speaking to you. You can get your copy completely free over at learntocodewith.me/side gig. Again, the URL is learntocodewith.me/side gig. Got it. And as you're just talking, it sounds like there is so much that you do. It almost sounds like a whole job unto itself, but you also work full time, right? So like how much time every week are you, I don't know, like do you work on it every day after work? Like how does it kind of look in the day to day?
That's a great question. And I think this is a pretty popular topic, especially for maintainers, because there's a lot of conversation about maintainers who burn out because they, not only spend a lot of time on their open source projects, but have their day jobs and are essentially doing two jobs and kind of grow fatigued and stressed from that process. So I have had both negative and positive experiences with this. I've had moments where I was focusing too much on trying to be the best at everything all the time and commit a ton of time to open source and my day job. And you know, that caused me to burn out. I have had moments where I was just focusing on my day job and didn't do any open source. And I think for me, it's just been a personal experience of trying to figure out where the best balance is for me. Generally, I will try and work on it every day after work, but I will break it up. Generally, I'll try to limit it to at most 2 hours, maybe an hour and a half. And usually what I'll do is I have my daily to-do list and I'll identify a particular thing that I want to do related to open source for that day. So maybe I want to work on an implementation for a feature, or maybe I want to go through and check my GitHub notifications and clear out the like 800 notifications that I have or something like that. So yeah, most people I know who work in open source actively and do it in addition to their day job. And I think we all have to kind of work on balancing our commitments to the job as well as open source, as well as other life obligations like family and friends and all that.
Got it. And so, okay, so that was all really great advice. But like, are there people that are doing this full time, like essentially doing what you do, not with a full time job and just doing open source, maintaining projects, maybe multiple, maybe one, I don't know. Is that like their full time thing?
Yeah. So I do know of a couple of people who do work on open source full time. For some of them, what they will do is they will work on it full time and they will have some sort of patronage page. I don't know if you're familiar with Patreon. It's essentially a web service where you can donate monthly to an individual. And what these open source maintainers will do is they will work on open source, ship all these really useful open source tools that tons of developers are using, and then those developers will donate to them on a monthly basis, and that's their income source as they kind of live off those monthly donations from individuals who use their technology. There are other people who work at open source foundations. So for example, the entire company is producing open source software. This is the case for the Firefox browser, which is open source and is run by Mozilla. So in that case, there is an organization that's funding the work full-time for individuals who are producing open source software. And then there are other cases where an individual might work for a private company like Google or Facebook or something. And that private company is interested in the open source technology. And so they will allow their engineers to spend time working on it. It might be, you know, one day a week, or it might be their full-time job, but they do it as part of their full-time role. So those are, I would say, are like the 3 degrees of working in open source that are more full-time than just doing it nights and weekends.
Gotcha. So that was like all super informative. I've of course heard of like Mozilla, and I think anyone who's used Mozilla, like you've seen probably like the donations. So I'm assuming the donations are going towards everyone maintaining all that, right?
Yeah. And Mozilla is a 501c3. So I guess it also goes to their operations and other things like that. I'm not aware of all of their internal finances, but it is essentially going to the organization.
Got it. Okay. And the private company one, yeah, I was, aware of that too. But okay, so that, and then there's the people with the Patreon pages where they're, getting money through donations that way. Okay, that's really cool. So how long have you been a maintainer? Like, how long did it take you to go from being a contributor to open source to, becoming a maintainer of a project?
Not long at all, believe it or not. I think it was probably a year. And I think that's the case for most projects. If you are an active contributor and you're really enthusiastic, existing maintainers are usually really eager to bring you into the fold as a maintainer. So you can help out and do a lot of the reviewing of code changes that are being submitted by people, triaging of issues that are coming in, providing support, all of that. I think there's definitely this presumption that some open source projects are a little elitist, and that there is a barrier that exists between being a contributor to being a maintainer. This might be the case in some projects. I know on the NRACT project, we really actively work against that. In fact, so actively that one of the policies that we have is that as soon as one of your pull requests is merged into an NRACT repo, you are a member of the NRACT organization. So you can go in and review code, post comments and things like that. So we've like completely reduced the barrier to being a maintainer. And personally, I think in a lot of ways, I don't feel like it's for projects that do have a culture where there are lots of really arbitrary barriers that are placed into what it means to be a contributor, to becoming a maintainer, it's not super healthy. My view on it is if someone's enthusiastic about something and they really care about the software and they really want to help maintain it and keep it going, then there shouldn't be anything that gets in the way of that. So from my personal experience, I was that way. I was enthusiastic. I really wanted to do it. And that opportunity was given to me. So I like to give that opportunity back to people. If you really want it, you should have it.
Yeah, I really like that mentality. And I'm changing subjects a little bit, but I really wanted to ask this because a lot of folks listening to the show want to get full-time jobs in tech. So they want to work as software engineers or data scientists or something else. And I was wondering, like, has your open source contributions, or maybe someone you know who also works in the, on open source projects, can that help you get a full-time job? And if so, like, could you talk a bit about that? Like, how to showcase it, I don't know, on your resume or LinkedIn or your portfolio website or something?
Yeah. So I would say it depends. And in this case, it depends on 2 things. It depends on the company that you are interviewing with, and it depends on the projects that you are working on. Some companies don't care about open source at all. Like, their interview criteria is, can you do these whiteboard coding questions? Do you have these certain things on your resume? Do you have these particular competencies? That's one class of companies. There is another class of companies that will look at your open source work as kind of a measure of your engineering skills. Because, this open source code, it's public, it's out there. If I am someone looking to hire you and I wanted to see how good of an engineer you are, what better way than to go see the code that you've written? So some companies will use it as that kind of measurement. And then other companies, if your open source project is something that is really well used or really popular, will hire you on the basis of being a contributor or maintainer within that project, because you have expertise that they want. So I think it depends. I would say the best kind of projects to do are probably not in the realm of, like web apps or I don't know what the best way to describe it, but I know some beginners will start off with like building a web app and putting that on their GitHub. I think that's certainly good with respect to like showcasing your skill set. I think what's a little bit better to do is to build open source projects that are more like packages for a programming language that you are interested in, or APIs or things like that, things that other developers can consume. That tends to be a really great way to showcase your technical skills and your ability to kind of ship something and maintain it in the long run, which is really important for having a full-time job as an engineer. So yeah, I would say the best kinds of projects are those kinds of projects where you're kind of showing that you can ship software consistently and it's a package or a tool that's going to be used by other developers, not just a side project that isn't really actively used. And then with respect to showcasing it, I think the best thing is just I personally just linked to my GitHub on my resume. There were points in time where I did list out the project that I contributed to in my resume. That's a good option as well. Those are the only two that I have experience with. I know some people will kind of create collages on their profile pages of what projects they contribute to. Generally, from my experience on the other side, as someone who's been on the hiring end at a full-time company, I'll just go straight to their GitHub if it's linked on their resume and I'll start poking around and looking at it. I don't really bother to go into any kind of portfolio page or something that they might have of all their GitHub projects. I'll just go straight to the source, but that might just be me. So yeah, I don't know if that was particularly helpful from my experience. Focus on projects that you ship consistently and that you work on long term, and that are more likely to be used by other people, especially if it's other developers, which tends to be the easiest thing to do. And then with respect to how to showcase it, I think as long as your GitHub is easy to link to, whoever's hiring you is probably going to find your GitHub and start looking through it and reading what you have.
Yeah. Oh, that's, those are really good tips. I would love actually if you can elaborate on something you mentioned just now. So you were saying making a package or an API or something that other developers can consume. Could you give like an example of what that could look like? It doesn't have to be super detailed, but maybe something you've done or a friend of yours has done or something.
Sure. So I can talk about it. One of the like side projects that I built is a command line tool called Legit. And what Legit would do is it would essentially, if you had an open source project, it would populate it with a license file. Generally, when you have an open source project, you have to pick some sort of license, which is essentially legalese that outlines the rights that other people have to use the source code within your project. And so I made a quick little tool that made it really easy to create a license file for your project. And I shipped that out a couple of years ago, and I shipped versions of it out every now and then. So there's kind of helpful tools like that. When it comes to packages, it could be something like an NPM package. One of the other packages that I've done was a middleware package that would integrate with another technology, it was a middleware package that would integrate with another node module. I feel like I'm using a lot of technical jargon here, but it was basically a package that allowed you to log certain things into a particular service called Sentry. And that was another package that I published and that people are using in production in their software at major companies, which is sometimes frightening to think about, that my code is being used by people, which is a good thing, but it's sometimes scary to think about. So yeah, those are the examples that come to mind for me, but just, things that I think the most important thing is not necessarily consumed by another developer, but just something that is used by other people and that you are maintaining in the long run.
I think one of the key distinctions between being a learner and just getting into software engineering versus being someone who's been a software engineer for several years is that when you've been doing it for a while, you start to develop a history where you have shipped products to customers and you've maintained those products by shipping out improvements, bug fixes, things like that. And I think showing that you have the ability to not just write software, but to write software and improve it is really important.
Oh, yeah, that's great. And I like how you clarified, like, something that people are using or businesses are using. It's like bringing value into the world in some way, even if it's, you know, really small, like a small thing, but it's bring value in some way. And I really liked the licensing example that you shared. That sounds like something that would be really useful for people and like beneficial. And I'm curious. I feel like let me check the clock here. Okay, we have a little bit more time. How did you even get that idea? Like, was it something that you were like, oh, this is a problem I have and I'm going to create this because I would use it? Or
yeah, that was exactly it. I was running into situations. I was running into situations where I was seeing a ton of my own GitHub projects without license files. And I was just noticing it in a lot of other people's projects. I was like, hey, it looks like there's space for something to be built to solve this problem. And so I went out and did it. So I think that's another really good thing is as you're learning, you might have those moments where you're like, am I just dumb or is this actually a problem? You're not dumb. Write it down and see if you can build something to solve that problem you're having or that hiccup you're running to. Because it's likely that if you're running into it, other people are too. And that's an opportunity for you to write software that delivers value that you can put on your GitHub, not only to showcase to companies that you want to hire you, but also to like start collaborating with people and to help others out. So I think that's a really good skill to develop is just as you're learning to code, as you're coding every day as a software engineer, be mindful of the problems that you run into and how you might build solutions to solve them that you can then share with other people via open source.
I love that. That is such a good way to, I think, end this interview. That's such good advice. I could like talk more about just that topic, but I'm going to hold myself back. I would love to ask you one more thing because I can ramble on for a while. But last thing, is there any parting advice you have for people who are just starting out and just getting their feet wet in technology?
I would say the most important skill set in being an engineer is not intelligence. It's not sheer genius. It's not what editor you have or what company you work at. I think the most important thing that has kept me interested and engaged in growing as a software engineer for so long is persistence. Some people will run into a bug that is really hard to debug and it gets the best of them and they will quit. Some people will not quit when they run into that difficult problem or that really hard to fix bug. And those are the people who become great engineers, who don't let those things get in the way of their progress. So persistence is key.
Awesome. I love that. Thank you so much again for coming on the show. And where can people find you online?
Yeah. So I have a personal website. My personal website is safia.rocks. It's a really awesome domain name that I scored. So if you go to safia.rocks, you will find my personal website. There you will find links to my blog, my Twitter, my LinkedIn, all of that good stuff, some of the conference talks I've given, books I've published, and then the open source projects that I work on are linked there as well. And then I'm probably most active on social media at Twitter. My Twitter handle is Captain Safia, so you can follow me there as well.
Great. Thank you again for coming on.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening today. If you want a reminder of anything that was covered in the episode, just head on over to learntocodewith.me/podcast. You can see all previously published episodes there. And if you enjoy a Learn to Code With Me podcast, please consider becoming a patron of the show. By pledging just a few dollars per month, you'll get access to a bunch of patron-only bonuses and privileges, like the ability to vote on the topics of future episodes. To find out more, go to learntocodewith.me/pledge. Thanks, and I'll see you next time.